podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Full Sail University. Full Sail offers both online and campus degree programs centered on real-world experiences in the entertainment, media, arts, and technology industries. For more information, visit fullsail.edu/AAA. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 175, recorded on Tuesday, August 19th, 2014. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Gina Trapani.
Welcome! That's okay. So right off the top, Brian is off because he hates us or something. We have Zach sitting in, learning on the TriCaster. Zach, it's good to have you on board. That's right. I'm going to bring you in right off the top. How are you doing today, and does the TriCaster intimidate you at all?
I'm doing well today. I love the TriCaster, so
okay.
Slightly intimidated, but I like to hear.
It's a lot of buttons. It's a lot of things, but you're going to do great. Appreciate you helping out while Brian's out. And also, you might notice Ron is not here today. He is on vacation, but I understand. We all need a little vacation. We need a little break. So that's Ron. He's out, but we have a fantastic guest joining us today. You've already seen him on the screen. It's Chris Lacey. He's the app developer of apps you've probably heard about, at least on this show and maybe elsewhere as well. Link Bubble, Action Launcher, and then recently released a new awesome app called TapPath. How you doing, Chris?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We're bringing you in from a completely different part of the world where it's 10:20 in the morning. Topsy-turvy.
Tomorrow.
In the future, exactly. So you'll have to account for a lot of these stories. You're going to have to tell us how the story's going to end up, not where we are right now.
Need any sports scores or anything, just shout out.
Man, it's like Back to the Future all over again. I love it. Cool. Well, Chris, it's awesome having you on the show. Of course, I had you on the premiere episode of my other Android show that just launched, Android App Arena, primarily because of your development, your time developing Link Bubble and Action Launcher. And later, we're going to talk to you about your new app, which I think is pretty fantastic as well. So really appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
No, not at all. Good to be here.
Awesome. Well, we have a lot of other things to talk about as well. We're going to be discussing the rumored YouTube Music service that I feel like we keep hearing so much, you know, rumory stuff about. It's starting to kind of get more and more real. Samsung's finally, their foray into metal-bodied phones. We're going to talk about that. 24-inch tablets for kids, if you can believe it. And a whole lot more. But the very first segment, the thing we like to do right off the top of every show, is start off with the news. Let's do it. Android news. I don't know. Brian normally does that, so there you go. That's my take on Brian's take.
Good one.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Kind of little Kermit the Frog twist there. So YouTube. So we keep hearing about this fabled like YouTube subscription music service and wondering how it's going to coexist with what we're used to right now, which is all access, play music all access. YouTube, their service is kind of materializing right now. We're starting to learn a little bit more about it. So here's what we know. Rebranding of Google Play Music All Access, so what we have right now, to something called Google Play Music Key, which right off the top, I'm not sure if I love the new name, but anyways, maybe it'll grow on me. I didn't love Play Store either when that first hit. YouTube service specifically would be called YouTube Music Key. That kind of makes sense. It's going to be a subscription music service. $9.99 per month with a 30-day free trial, capable of background audio and offline caching from the YouTube site into the app, and all ad-free because you're paying for it, of course. Tailored, from what we understand, it's more tailored for the album experience or like live mixes and maybe DJ mixes. You don't find a lot of those on Play Music right now. It's more single tracks than it is full album plays. So stuff like that, live music, concerts, remixes, kind of taking what, you know, the concerts that people upload and monetizing it somehow. I don't know. It's a little bit of murkiness there, but no idea of when this is going to launch. But I think the overall thought is, if I'm reading this correctly, is that Play Music All Access, what we pay for right now, what I pay for right now, Gina, I think you do too. Chris, do you have access to All Access? And you pay you have a subscription for that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it came out in Australia. Gosh, it didn't hit when it came in the States, but it came a few months after. So yeah, I've got it.
Okay, so you've had it for a while and get, you know, pretty used to paying that $10 fee for a month. Apparently, this is going to combine both services. So as far as I can tell anyways, if you're paying for one, you're paying for both. So you also get that YouTube access. But I couldn't tell if I was reading that wrong, but that sounds awesome because I know I probably wouldn't pay $20 a month for two different services. I just want one service for 10. So Chris, how does this strike you? Does this make sense? Is this a service that you'd be excited to kind of tap into? Is this something that you're missing right now?
I think it makes a lot of sense. I've got young kids, and increasingly I just turn the TV on and set them up with the Chromecast, and I've just got a little kids playlist of, you know, the same songs. I don't know how many times I've heard Single Ladies and Roar at this point, but and I just play those, you know, nine songs, and the kids, you know, love and do their own dance moves and that sort of stuff. And, you know, once you're doing that, it's not that much of a stretch to use a similar service without the video. And I think there's a lot of opportunity there. My biggest question was what they were going to do as far as my the Play Music subscription I've already got, but it seems like common sense has prevailed there, and they'll be under the same subscription. So yeah, I'm excited to see how it turns out.
Yeah, and I think it makes perfect sense, particularly for, you know, like DJ mixes and stuff. Like you go, you know, in a previous life, I was an electronic music DJ, and when I was really kind of knee deep in that world, all I listened to were DJ mixes. So there's all of these mixes that I don't really have direct access to through something like Play Music necessarily, not to mention all the live and stuff like that. I suppose what you're paying for here is the ability to kind of turn your screen off and use YouTube as a music player, perhaps for music that's already uploaded there that you can get to right now. But YouTube, based on some of the screenshots, there's an Android Police article that we have in the rundown, has some screenshots of the Android app. And in there, you know, it even alludes to a lot of new music that's being added just for this service. Sound good to you, Gina? Any thoughts or concerns?
A little bit of a weird fit. I mean, it makes sense because it feels like this is a marketing thing where they're just moving Play Music over to YouTube because YouTube is a much better known brand, a much more popular brand. I think where my brain is having a hard time, you know, transferring Google Play, you know, all access over to YouTube is, YouTube to me is videos, right? So just say it's a music service, just sounds weird. YouTube isn't a music service, even though lots of people use it as a music service. I mean, my one-year-old also has her playlist of, you know, Pharrell and Elmo songs and the whole thing. And, and so, you know, we loop playlists of music videos all the time. So that makes sense. I wonder, like, what's going to happen to my collection of music that I uploaded to All Access, you know, to Google Play. I guess that stays in the same place. I'm not sure. The music key thing makes me think that there's going to be like video key or movies or TV key. I don't know. So that makes me wonder, you know, is the Play Store, are there, you know, is there TV and movies also going to move over to YouTube because that's just a much more popular brand? And then I think, well, why did we do the whole Play Store rebranding to begin with?
Well,
so it just, a lot of questions, more questions than answers.
Yeah. And I don't mean to allude that Play Music is going away necessarily, or even that Play Music All Access is going away. I think from what I can gather from this, it's that Play Music All Access and YouTube's Music Key are going to kind of coexist. So you still have access to the stuff that you do on Play Music, But you also, through your $10 a month or $8 a month in my case, and probably yours because of Google I.O., you also get the key to YouTube's music service, right? So, which still is kind of a weird thing to think about, right? Because then you're going into these two different directions. When do you choose to go to YouTube versus going to Play Music for things that, you know, if it's a DJ mix, oh, well, obviously I go to YouTube. Like that, I don't know. Like, I don't know how it's going to work
out.
Yeah, obviously. This is the thing that we can imply.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me at all of the company that has both Chrome and Android as working their music service and to do different, you know, umbrellas and seeing how that works. I mean, totally. You know, it isn't surprising.
It's almost like the Prime subscription gives you access to this channel and, you know, the instant movie streaming, and it also gives you access to this other thing. So maybe it's more like that. Like if you're paying for one, you get access to both of those members only areas.
That makes a little more sense.
And I suppose that's nice. That would be nice. Yeah, so there you go. Totally unrelated, Pharrell and Elmo. It only makes sense that somebody comes out under the guise of Pharrellmo and combines the two.
Pharrellmo would be, my daughter would be a huge fan.
I'm sure. See, there's a huge market there.
Elmo dancing to Happy.
Yes, exactly.
That's got to exist. I'm sure it exists on YouTube.
I'm sure it's somewhere. Has to be. So what about Google Now, Gina? What's happening there?
Google Now's getting even better. Isn't it always? I feel like every week there's a new feature in Google Now. Mm-hmm. But the new big feature is actually going to be an app that we already sort of know and love, Field Trip, which is Niantic Labs' app. Niantic Labs is a Google company. They're a separate company. Unclear, but they're the ones that made that app Field Trip, which first came out on phones and then came out on Glass. And it's the app that basically watches where you go and tells you if something interesting is nearby in terms of location or landmarks. Well, that information is now going to be showing up just in Google Now without having to install Field Trip at all. Cards will apparently surface in Google Now that grab points of interest, restaurants, and facts about your surroundings from data that's been aggregated within Field Trip. Like I said, no need to install Field Trip. It's just going to start showing up into that nearby card. And I'm actually kind of interested to see this new card coming up. You know, Google just released the Explore Nearby in Google Maps. So you can see that Google's doing a lot with this, with Field Trip cards and Now and Explore in Maps. They're really kind of getting into the whole what's interesting nearby, kind of directing you to points of interest. So, yeah, I'm excited about that. How are you, Jason? Do you still use Field Trip? Do you run it or no? You gave up on it. It was really noisy for me, so I gave.
It was noisy, and I feel like Field Trip. In my mind, Field Trip's the kind of app that I would install if I'm going somewhere. You know, if I'm like taking a trip somewhere or going on a vacation, then I might install it. Or going to another country, I might install that app. And even then, it might end up being, well, A, I'd have to pay for data wherever I'm at. Otherwise, it's of no use to me. And B, it might still end up being too noisy. But I don't know. Chris, did you play around with the Field Trip app? And what do you think about that?
No, but I've got a trip to America coming up soon. So something, I like the idea of something like that. And, you know, having it built into Now certainly sounds cool. Mm-hmm. I don't know how enthused I'd be about it, you know, what information appeared if I'm local. You know, I don't know how much of that information would be useful versus noise when I'm at home.
Yeah.
But I think it sounds interesting and all seems to tie into Larry Page's off-repeat and mantra of giving you the information you want, you know, without having to ask for it. So,
yeah, precisely. Yeah, the Field Trip doesn't strike me as the kind of thing that you use for where you live, unless you're new to where you live or where you live is just so huge and vast, which is definitely the case in places, you know, big, large cities, New York, San Francisco, of course. But up here in Petaluma, I'm not sure that I'd learn a whole lot from Field Trip, to be honest.
Every time we bring up a location app, you're like, yep, the same.
I know where I'm at. I drive like 3 blocks, 3 miles to work. There we go. Oh, life is so different now that I live in Petaluma and I don't live in San Francisco anymore. I'm sure a few years ago I'd be singing maybe a little bit different of a tune. But I do think that it makes perfect sense, right? That field trip, you know, Niantic? I don't know.
The Ingress people.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. They're all part of the Google world. And so it makes sense that that would feed into Google Now because, I mean, that's what that service is all about. It's actually, now that this is happening, kind of surprising that it hasn't happened sooner. But
yep.
So hopefully that makes it even more awesome. And then finally, China's Xiaomi released their next version of Android for their Mi phones. Or, yeah, I think it's Mi 6 and then also Mi 3 or Mi 4 and Mi 5 will be getting it eventually. Looks a lot like iOS 7, but, you know, MIUI has always kind of drawn influence from iOS, or at least every version that I've seen really looks similar to the current version of iOS, whatever it happens to be. And right now, of course, iOS 7 with its flashy, bright, you know, colors and kind of flat design. This also brings in a familiar, you know, notification shade into the view and a lot more. It's in beta mode with a small group, and a larger rollout is going to begin soon, supposedly. And like I said, the 3, the 4, they're going to get the update eventually as well. Now, Xiaomi has global ambitions. It's part of the reason the company brought Hugo Barra, who's then an executive at Google, on board. And, you know, I think more and more we're hearing Xiaomi. Like, I think a year ago, it was this phone company that if you were in China or around that area, you probably heard a lot about it. You definitely did because they're pretty darn popular in China. But in the U.S. particularly, you really heard hardly anything. And now suddenly in the last year, there's a lot more awareness, a lot more people following, and that's partially because their hardware is actually really good looking. Haven't played with it myself, but it's very possible that we could see an entry into the U.S. market in 2015, next year, and I'm really kind of looking forward to it. I want to see, you know, more competition and kind of see firsthand what they can create. I think it's pretty interesting stuff. Any thoughts on kind of the influence of Xiaomi on the world scale of smartphones right now and kind of what the potential could be with a company like Xiaomi? What do you think, Chris?
I'm pretty interested to see how this is going to go going forward. I think the influence from iOS and Apple in general, I think it's undeniable.
Yeah.
Look at that phone. It hasn't got the circle button at the bottom, but it's rounded just like it looks like an iPhone.
It oozes. It
really does. I know that their executives have made numerous comments saying, we don't like those comparisons. They're not fair. But I think it's very easy to see why those comparisons are being made. There's a strong Apple influence there, and I'm actually quite interested to see, because the company's obviously expanding pretty quickly and seems to have a lot of enthusiastic followers and people really keen on their products. I'm really keen to see what happens if and when they go into more Western markets with courts of law, because I can't imagine, you know, Samsung copied, but they did it pretty poorly. These guys are doing it really well, and I can't imagine Apple are going to be too thrilled about it. And I'm going to be interested to see how that plays out. I mean, not that I'm a fan of lawsuits or anything like that, but I can't help look at these products and devices and not think how that's going to play out long term.
Yeah. Kind of feels inevitable. Hard to believe that they don't see the connection between their device, or that they don't admit that they do, to Apple devices and kind of the Apple ethos, particularly because on the unveiling of the Mi 4, Xiaomi CEO Li Jun had specifically the slide behind him, the one more thing. You know, and so it's, yes, it's like kind of point by point. There are many reasons. That's just one, by the way, obviously, but one of many ways that you can kind of point to Xiaomi and go, okay, Yeah, you know, but hey, if you're going to follow in someone's, you know, someone's footsteps, follow success. And Apple has done very well with what they do.
Jobs is famous for his quote, right, about good artists copy, great artists steal. And Apple did that for, you know, for the longest time. And now they've taken a leadership position. They're sort of flipping that around and don't want stealing anymore. So there's, you know, but that's sort of a different issue. But I can't help but look at these devices and be curious how that's all going to play out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Next week, Ron Amadio of Ars Technica, frequent guest on the show and generally all around awesome guy. He's going to be on, and he has gone through great lengths to get a Mi 4 device. And so he's going to talk all about it next week. So definitely check next week's episode out. I'm really looking forward to that because definitely have questions about this particular device. The more I see him, the more I'm like, you know, that's pretty solid hardware. So I'm curious to know how solid the entire experience is. So that's next week.
Very cool.
Yeah, super cool stuff. So, Gina, we have an email that deals with, well, just kind of the privacy and permissions topic that seems to keep coming up on the show.
Yeah. I think I had another one of my rants about Android permissions and how you're presented with this big, long, and now nested list of permissions when you install an app, and how it's ridiculous to foist the onus upon the user to read the list and understand and accept, and that we all just tap accept and move through it. So Ira wrote an email in asking about this. And Ira says, I agree with you that Android needs something better for app permissions. And I think that what Apple does with iOS, I haven't used it, so I only know what I've heard on All About Android and elsewhere on Twit, is a much less confusing way to handle this. Did you know, Ira writes, that CyanogenMod's Privacy Guard feature already does this? In Settings, Privacy Guard, just check Enabled by default and install a few apps. If you long press one of the newly installed apps, you'll notice that it sets some permissions to auto start or to allow, but most of the permissions should be set to always ask. Since Gina has a OnePlus One, I'd be interested to hear her opinion on the user experience. This is one of the many features I can't live without in the stock Google experience, but that's a rant from another time. Suffice it to say, there's a lot more to CyanogenMod than some Google zealots give it credit for. And that's an email from Ira. Well, Ira, I do have the OnePlus One here, which is running CyanogenMod. And I did find those privacy settings, which comes with CyanogenMod. And I was really impressed. I really like that. And I'm not really even sure how CyanogenMod did it. These guys are good. That it can basically intercept your permissions. So you install an app, you grant it permissions, then you can say, hey, always ask, kind of go the Windows Vista route. Always ask when you want to do something, and then the app will prompt you. Is it okay? Can I use the camera? Can I access your contacts, et cetera? I think that the CyanogenMod implementation is a good first start. But if Google were to implement something like this inside the stock experience, it can't be an afterthought. You know, it has to kind of be all the way through, from the Play Store all the way through. And this is the thing, like, I'm a big believer in the power of kind of default settings. I didn't see those privacy settings in CyanogenMod until after I was poking around through settings. And let's face it, you know, most normal users don't poke around through settings that deeply. So in terms of user experience, I think it's good. I think it can get better. I think if the default was always ask, and I believe in order to do this well, you really have to do this from stock plain Android all the way up, it would be a little bit better. Now, people have brought up that, you know, say Windows Vista was one of those annoying operating systems that would prompt you, you know, you go to launch Notepad and it would be like, are you sure you want to do this? You know, of course, you know, you don't want it to be really annoying, but for the sensitive data like my location or my SMS log, or my contacts or my camera or my photos, you know, those seem like things that I'd want to, you know, not grant permission for forever and ever from the beginning I install the app, you know, on something that, maybe I'd like to grant permission for an app to access, you know, on a prompted basis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and there is, so yes, Windows Vista is the example that gets compared to this a lot, but there's another example, and that is iOS, right? And iOS does it, and people don't seem to mind so much. Or maybe they've just gotten used to it. Or does iOS do it to a lesser extent than Android would? Like, is their view
of... There are definitely a lot more permissions on Android.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are.
That's what I was wondering.
There's no question there. But I think this is an issue that I could I could talk about for the entire show, to be honest. It's
that
I've thought about a lot, both as a user and a developer. And I really dislike the current system at the moment. Like, to give you an example of as a user, I bought a Galaxy S4 last year and then was poking around through the apps, and there's all these apps on there that, like, there's one called Com2US Poker, which I have no idea what it is. This app has access to my email address, my phone number, a network connection, and it's installed on the device by default. I can't even disable it. Samsung blocked that. I just got this rogue app on my device that is sending information I don't know where, and I simply can't stop it. I think it is entirely equivalent to buying a new house and there's a bedroom with a camera and you have no idea where it goes and you can't turn it off. Like, that would be entirely unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why it is acceptable from a phone point of view. I just think it's and you know, 99% of people are never even going to know about this app, but all this data of theirs has been transferred somewhere and they don't even know where. And they certainly can't stop it. And I think it's a dreadful situation and something that just shouldn't be allowed to happen. Like, I would absolutely be in favor of the iOS route there, where, you know, the first time that app runs, it says, "Do you want this information?" And I say no, and that's it. Then it's just useless.
Yeah, so Gina, from your experience with it, so you are running with Privacy Guard on your OnePlus, is that right?
I didn't turn it on. This is the thing about Privacy Guard. It's a really long list. So every single app you can customize whether or not it always asks you or not. And then on a permission basis, you can grant or deny access. And I'll be honest, like, I just haven't had the time. Haven't had the time to go through. And again, like, I think the Privacy Guard is a Band-Aid. And to me, you know, like, I didn't install the Facebook app. I use Facebook, the web view on my phone, which is terrible compared to the native app. But I just wouldn't give the native app, you know, access to all my SMS messages. Like, no, not okay. So I'm trying to kind of approach this from a normal user point of view. Mm-hmm. Most people don't have Privacy Guard because most people don't have Cyanogen Mod. So I didn't set it up. Also, I'm a little lazy.
No, I mean,
but in that Facebook case, then that app will then. Yeah, I was the same. I didn't want to install and give it up, you know, the extra permissions. But the next phone you get has the latest version of Facebook installed, and it's got them by default, and you can never revoke them.
That's true. Well, and all the phones have Hangouts installed, and they require a lot of the same permissions as Facebook. So it ends up becoming this slippery slope of who do you trust and why do you not trust them, and. Yeah, it's confusing. Something needs to happen, and I'm really hoping. I mean, I don't know. It would be great if we saw, you know, L, the official version of L, come out, and, you know, there's a long list of things that aren't included in the developer preview, and that becomes one of them, which is, hey, we've.
I don't think it is.
Yeah, that would be great. I'm not saying that I think it's actually going to happen, but
yeah, it would be fantastic. Yeah. I pulled a few of the engineers up at IO and. Gave them the same sort of example and they agreed, but I think it is such a massively complex issue. I'd be very surprised if anything was done in L, which is, I think it's a shame, but I thought it was a shame nothing was done, you know, all the other releases. So
what about developer pushback? Do you think there'd be a big outcry from developers that don't want this kind of view, like transparent view into the permissions that their app needs?
I think it would maybe depend on the motives of the developer.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're in the business of data collection, then
probably not going to be too happy about that.
Probably not going to be too happy. But
yeah.
Whereas me, like I'm absolutely in favor of it as a developer. Like I've Action Launcher, for instance, has a feature that allows you to search your contacts from the search bar at the top. And, for that, I need the read contacts permission, and the same for the call phone permission to initiate a phone call from a shortcut. I would love to get rid of those permissions up front, and the first time you use that feature, say, "Hey, you know, I need to make a phone call now. Do you give permission?" And yep. That way, it, you know, I don't have this overbearing list of permissions when you go to first install the app, and I don't have to pollute my product listing saying this is why I'm using this permission. It's because I want to, like, I'm very cautious with permissions, and I want people to trust that I'm going to, you know, not use their data in any nefarious ways or anything. Sure. And my solution at the moment, certainly for Action Launcher, for some features, I had to release a separate app, which has permissions to read your SMS count and Gmail count and that sort of stuff, because I just didn't feel right about putting that in the default app. It's just, I personally find it too much when I want to check out a new way to launch apps to have to hand over, you know, my unread count and SMS reading and all that. I just think it's too much as a user. So I have to add a separate app for that one in the Play Store. So I would love it, but I'm sure Facebook wouldn't.
Right, right. Yeah, fair enough. Cool stuff. Great discussion on that topic. And I feel like it's, the permissions topic is just one of those that's going to keep coming around until hopefully it's fixed.
But
hey, props to CyanogenMod and OnePlus for integrating that by default. Because even though it's a Band-Aid, it's a step.
Something.
It's a signal that there's something, that there's potentially, there's desire for that kind of feature. And maybe, you know, hopefully more of that tells Google, if they don't know already, that things are a little rotten in Denmark and need to be cleaned up. Mm-hmm. But there we go. Let's take a minute and thank our sponsor for today's episode. That'd be Full Sail. We're super happy to have Full Sail on board with us here at All About Android. You've seen how the popularity of a mobile game can spread like wildfire. I mean, we see it all the time online. The mobile gaming industry has become extremely profitable, and there's a demand out there for skilled developers who understand the needs of both gaming and mobile app creation. Right now, in particular on Android, we're just seeing a crazy influx of awesome games coming out for Android. And, it doesn't take much for those games to catch fire, and suddenly it's a viral hit, and everybody's downloading it. So it's great to get in on that while the getting's good. Full Sail University actually offers an online master's degree program in mobile gaming, which can teach you the coding and business knowledge needed to become a professional in this career field. It's a great one to be in right now. This is an accelerated master's program. You're going to become immersed in the mobile gaming industry through a series of courses that directly relate to those in a game studio. It's advanced programming, concept development, QA testing, deployment, all that stuff is covered. You'll create a mobile game from start to finish, and then you'll present and market your product. So it covers all the bases. Full Sail University's online and campus degree programs are centered on real-world education and experience with industry technology and workflow. Through their innovative curriculum, you're going to learn and earn your master's degree in 12 months. And you know, game development is only one of the facets. You can find all sorts of creative arts, business, communications, film. It covers all the gamut. And you know, in my history with audio production, I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've read, you know, interviews with and all that kind of stuff that started in the recording arts with Full Sail. And you know, that's what, you know, as interns, they needed to have this knowledge, and Full Sail was a great way to get them started. So it really covers the bases for creative arts. In addition to mobile gaming, Full Sail University offers, like I say, a variety of master's degrees in business, tech fields, internet marketing, business intelligence, innovation, and entrepreneurship. So to learn more about Full Sail's master's degree program in mobile gaming or any of their related programs, they have a ton, check out fullsail.edu/AAA. That's fullsail.edu/AAA. We thank Full Sail University for their support of All About Android and the TWiT Network. It's great having you guys on board. All right. And with that, we've got a lot of hardware to talk about. So let's jump into the hardware section. Anyone waiting for Samsung to debut finally at some point a phone made of metal? Wait no longer. The Samsung Galaxy Alpha was announced last week. It brings, I would say, moderate specs to a premium metal chassis, or at least around the edges it's metal. I don't know if the entire thing through and through is metal. I think the back plate still might actually be, still kind of looks a little like plastic material, but, you know, the foundation of the phone appears to be metal. It's 4.7-inch, 1280 by 720 Super AMOLED display, an Exynos octa-core processor, that's Sony's Exynos processor, 2 gigs of RAM, 32 gigs of internal storage. There is no micro SD support, has an 1860 milliamp hour battery, fingerprint sensor, 12 megapixel rear-facing camera, 2.1 megapixel front-facing camera. The Exynos octa-core processor is a quad 1.8 gigahertz and then a quad 1.3 gigahertz. So maybe not necessarily mid-range. Maybe, I don't know. Yeah, who knows where it sits. But it's definitely not as, I would say, as capable under the hood and as spec'd out as like the Galaxy S5 is, for example. But you get the metal casing. It comes black, white, gold, silver, and blue. Releases September 2014 in 150 countries. What do you think? We've talked, and yes, fairly or unfairly, we've railed on Samsung many times on this show about you know, their plastic approach with phones, even though some people, that's what they love about Samsung because it makes the phones more durable in some cases. What do you guys think? Gina, does this excite you? Do you like the design? Did they get it right?
I'm gonna react like a small child and be like, pretty colors.
Yeah, right.
These are pretty colors. This is a nice selection of colors. I like the aesthetics of this build than the plastic. I actually do think the colors are pretty well executed. The blue is a little weird. But this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
Curious to know what Ron has to say. We'll have to ask him about this next week.
Yeah, we will.
He's definitely been a critic of the plastic approach. Chris, do you think Samsung has a winner here? Like, what I'm wondering is, it almost seems like this is proof of concept. Like, okay, we're going to put this out there. We're going to see how much people actually really care about it. But could we envision a world where the Samsung Galaxy S6 comes out in a variety of different, not only colors, but, you know, metal casing as well as plastic for those who want to choose?
Well, Samsung love their variants more than anyone.
That's true.
I think it looks fine. I'd personally be a lot more interested if I could just click a button and get a Google Play edition of it. I don't like how they've persisted with their silly little Band-Aid.
The Band-Aid
thing
backing
on the back. Mm-hmm. But. No, I mean, I think it looks all right. I can't imagine myself buying one.
Is that the Samsung? Inspire a whole lot of excitement.
I know.
We're good with it. We're not over the moon, but
Samsung release a phone like every 3 weeks, don't they?
It really kind of feels that way. I feel like they actually released another phone that didn't make it in the lineup. So yes, they release so many phones that we don't talk about all of them on the show. So
I actually have some guilt about it because Samsung is such it's just a big seller, and like it's made Android so popular. Yes. And like people love them, and I feel a little bit like we're kind of in the elite Android bubble.
Yes.
A little bit with the way that we talk about Samsung. But
Sideways M in the chat room is correcting me, points a link to an article which I'll include in the show notes that kind of breaks down on gsmarena.com that breaks down the performance, and actually this performs pretty well in some cases, better than the S5. So there we go. Give it some props. I think it's a great start, and I'm happy to see Samsung, at least if Samsung's the company that's going to throw everything against the wall and see what sticks, at least they finally threw a metal phone against the wall. And I'm sure it didn't stick, but
sure,
maybe it made a dent in the wall or something. I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
A dent in the wall versus a dent in the universe.
Exactly. A few other phones have broken, actually kind of broke out on Twitter and the news this morning. We have one from Sony, right, Gina?
Yeah, Sony announced a new mid-range phone that is the first smartphone to tout IP65/68 water resistance. I didn't know what that meant. And if you didn't either, just It's this. It's the highest grade of water resistance of an electronic device out there. This one's a 4.8-inch HD display, 540 by 960 pixels, 1.2 gigahertz Snapdragon 400 quad-core processor, gig of RAM, 8-megapixel rear-facing camera, 8 gigabytes internal storage, 4G LTE. Pretty good specs. Runs Android 4.4.2. But the big feature here is that this thing is very water resistant. Their video for this, it's got this phone in the shower. It's got like a dude like snorkeling and watching videos on his phone, like underwater.
Because what you need to do when you're snorkeling and like in the Bahamas is pull out your phone and watch a video.
Like in the pool, getting washed with the peaches, getting water spilled on it. They go through a lot of trouble to tell you that the phone is very water resistant.
That's the thing.
This is the Xperia M2 Aqua. So the water resistance kind of like is the marquee feature, which I find insane personally. But there you go. If you snorkel a lot, you can get things done underwater.
It always makes the news if you're the first smartphone of some category, right?
Or
you're the first technology of some category. This is the first smartphone rated IP 6568. We're so used to hearing about devices rated IP 57, which is water resistance, dust resistance, that sort of thing. This goes deeper than that.
Yeah.
Chris, you rushing out to buy one because you do a lot of snorkeling and you like to watch videos underwater. Is that what's going on?
Well, I like to write apps underwater. So,
okay, perfect.
Waterproof MacBook, and then I'll be all set now.
Yeah, there's no other. Does anybody develop on land? Of course. I do my best coding underwater. No, I was watching this video, and I spill water, or it starts raining, or whatever, and I want my device to not die if that happens. But I also just found the whole shower thing and the bathtub and the under, in the pool.
Did you see the guy who was in a park in the rain with his phone in the mud doing push-ups, watching video on his waterproof phone? That was my favorite.
Yeah.
They get to the core. They get to the heart of what every runner push-up guy does, every day.
Atypical use cases.
Yes, exactly. There we go. That's the better way of saying that.
Okay, if this means that all of our phones are going to be a little more waterproof going forward, then fine. I'll take the early entry. But stories like this remind me how early we are in this whole industry.
Yeah, it's true, right? Although I will say it's probably – this comes at a cost of the little flappy connector cover things, which I'm never a huge fan of. I'm looking at the pictures to see if I can see the little flappies. And those are always a pain in the butt. But hey, that's what you get. That's what you get for true water resistance. So there you go. Also, we have Sharp. Not really very used to hearing about Sharp releasing smartphones, but they have a new 5-inch Aquos Crystal device that's actually coming to Sprint here in the U.S. is priced at $239 off contract. So furthering the trend of pretty darn looking reasonably spec'd devices at a really low off-contract price. We're seeing more and more of this these days. 720p display, true edge-to-edge, meaning, in this case, there actually is no bezel at all, period. It goes right to the edge of the screen, right to the casing, and off the side. Verge editor Dan Seifert was blown away by this. He actually said in his write-up, quote, "It's remarkable to see in pictures, but in person it looked like something taken straight out of a science fiction movie set. I couldn't stop looking at the screen. It's really that striking. It reminds me of an infinity pool that has no edge." That's high praise for a display, particularly for a display on a device that's considered kind of mid-ish range and coming out at $239 off contract. So in this case, the display is the wow factor, right? 1.2 quad core, 1.2 gigahertz quad core, 1.5 gigs of RAM, 8 gigs of internal storage, micro SD slot, thankfully, because 8 gigs is not very much, and no timing on release. I don't know. Twitter, I feel like, kind of exploded with people who were at the press unveiling and got to get their hands on it. Suddenly, everybody was tweeting from the event saying, "Wow, this is like really impressive to see in person." Who'd have thunk? I don't know. I like me a little bezel on my phones, but I'm really curious to see this. What do you, What do you think? Bezel, yes or no, Chris? The hardest question of the show.
I hate bezels.
So there you go.
I'm actually, I would love to see a phone with no bezels. I think it looks interesting. What stands out to me, though, is I remember reading a quote from Johnny Ive about when they were developing the original iPhone, and they modeled it on the iPad Nano at the time, which had the sort of silver everywhere. And then he said Jobs came in one day and went, I don't like the silver. It takes attention away from the screen, and the screen should be the focus. Mm-hmm. And that was a bit of a light bulb moment for them. Looking at this, they've got this fantastic screen, and a large part of what I see is the silver at the bottom. It seems strange that they wouldn't have just gone with a much more neutral color there. I think it looks interesting.
And it's sharp.
It is sharp. I'm surprised they don't do a bit more.
It's pretty striking to see it without the bezel.
Mm-hmm.
And this made me think, like, why do we have the bezel? Like, there's no user experience reason why the bezel exists, right? It's not like your fingers touch the sides and would register a touch, right?
Well, I feel like I've heard some people complain, like, have that as their complaint for bezel, you know, or their reason to not want a bezel-less phone is that, well, you need a little bit of bezel there so that, you know, when you're holding your phone, it doesn't, like you say, register a tap or whatever. Mm-hmm. If it's right to the edge, then you're going to register a bunch of things that you don't intend to do. But I don't know if that's necessarily the case, because you still kind of have the casing kind of lipping around on the sides to kind of prevent you from doing that. Obviously, it isn't the case if they're putting out a phone like this. What's that?
If you had an external case, you'd need a bezel.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
To do an edge
Okay. That's a good point.
Yeah, otherwise you're going to be covering up your screen with your case. That doesn't sound
right.
So
it would have to be more of a bumper, right, than a case that kind of wraps around.
Right.
Yeah, it's neat. I would like to hold one of these. I'd like to just know what. But it's funny, Chris. You made a good point that the bottom, the base of it, really sticks out without the bezel around the rest of it.
Yeah, I mean, yes, exactly. And I don't know how you get rid of that base, because it has things like a camera and, you know, the microphone and stuff like that. So you kind of need some of that stuff down there. But yeah, you're right. Maybe going for a less predominant color or shading or something. Who knows?
Yeah.
But there you go. So that's Sharp's.
If it imperils more people looking at no bezel devices, I'm absolutely all for it.
Yep. Agreed. And then finally, Gina.
Of weird devices.
Curious to know what you think about this, Gina. Yeah.
So we've joked about tablets getting bigger and bigger. We've joked about big screen HD TVs becoming ginormous tablets. Well, this story's for you. The Fuhu, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. The Fuhu 20-inch Nabi Big Tablet. Big Tab. It's for kids. For families, it's a huge tablet/TV thing. It's meant to make the tablet experience less about one kid and more of a shared experience. Okay, so there's a 20 and 24-inch models. The 20-inch model weighs 10.5 pounds, okay?
A heavy tablet,
metal frame with a kickstand. The 20-inch has a 1600 by 900 pixel display. The 24-inch has 1920 by 1080 HD display. And a 1650 milliamp battery that lasts for 30 minutes?
Yep.
Okay, I thought I misread that.
No, that's right. I thought I misread it when I was writing up the notes. No, but that's right.
The battery is meant for when it's toted from room to room, and then it's supposed to be rely on plugged-in power. Yeah. The 20-inch will be $449. The 24-inch will be $529. Fuhu expects a fall release. So, yeah. This is a giant tablet. And it's for kids. And you know what? It's so funny. If I had done this story before I became a parent, I would say that this was insane and I couldn't even imagine it. Mm-hmm. But now that I have a one-year-old who's sort of like, you know, with the tablet and like trying to trying to like balance it and use it and trying to do things with her on it, I could kind of see the use case for having this giant 10-pound thing plugged into the wall and like playing with her on it. That said, I don't think this is going to be any kind of hit. I don't know. What do you think, Jason? Would your kids play with this thing?
More and more, we're moving into the world of the Surface and not the Surface tablet, yes. but the Surface table. And
the
in that regard, I think something like this could be kind of cool, right? Like if the goal is a shared device, because I see my 4.5-year-old daughter, she'll grab my phone and she, you know, becomes a zombie in her own little world. Yet at the same time, some nights we play board games. It would be kind of cool to be able to play like a shared game with her on a really large screen device. So I see it from that perspective. I feel like this is kind of early days as far as that is concerned. And I wouldn't say that the Nobby tablets of past have had rave reviews from parents, you know, for a random number of reasons, durability, the experience just isn't that great. I haven't used one myself personally, so I can't speak from experience, but I think it's interesting that like the largest tablet is a kid's tablet. So
it is
24-inch tablet for kids.
My daughter basically touches every screen. Like she touches the TV screen. She touches my laptop screen. She just expects that every screen is touch screen because my phone and the tablet were her first screens. So I feel like something like this could be really cool, but man, 30-minute battery plugged in power, 10 pounds. That's crazy. It's kind of awesome.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting that there's such a low capacity battery in there, considering like, it's one of the reasons why we have larger and larger devices is because people put a premium on battery. And in order to get, you know, more battery power into the phone has to be larger so it can fit a larger battery. Now you've got like the largest tablet in the world, maybe not in the world, but 24 inches is a pretty darn large tablet. And yet the battery only lasts for 30 minutes. They couldn't bother putting in a little bit more battery in there. But that's okay. I guess you got to bring your costs down somehow. So there you go.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on the super big Nobby tablet, Chris? Rush out and get one for your kids?
For me.
No. Okay. Yeah, we'll see. I'd be curious to play with one, but
I would worry that would fall and
kidding.
Crush your child.
Yeah, it might actually hurt your child when it falls.
Yes.
It's that heavy. Oh, there you go. Okay, so let's talk real quick here about a little Android Wear stuff. First up, Moto 360. It turns out we might be seeing this pretty soon. It's expected to be announced on September 4th at a scheduled Motorola event. They sent out kind of an invite notice about that, so we're kind of expecting that's going to be the Moto 360. Along with that, it's pretty safe to say that it's Moto 360 because all Google I/O attendees got an email later that day that said a few days after this that there's a deadline for us to sign up and give them our addresses so that a few days after this it can ship. So pretty certain it's the Moto 360 announcement. But we know a little bit about the Moto 360 thanks to Best Buy. So you can thank the blue-shirted folks at Best Buy for this. Nice. $249. Is that a price that you thought it was going to be? Did you think it was going to be more or less? What do you guys think?
It's ballpark.
Is it ballpark?
Yeah.
I think it's a great price. For some reason, I expected it to be a little bit more than that, though.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to come out a little more.
A little higher, yeah. Yeah, because it was kind of the premium watch, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So $249, 1.5-inch LCD, 320 by 290 display at 205 pixels per inch. Heart rate monitor, which I was happy to see because I felt like that was justification. When I was at Google I/O and it was kind of off hours in the press room, there was a woman that had a Moto 360 and another woman that was talking to her. My first opportunity to see the Moto 360 up close and personal. The other woman went and got it and she handed it to me. She didn't know she wasn't supposed to hand it to me. And I flipped it over and the back of the Moto 360 doesn't look anything like on the photos that I've seen since. It had a little kind of sensor in it that I could have swore was a heart rate monitor that looked a lot like the one on the Fit or the Samsung Gear Live. So this whole time I've been like, man, it better have a heart rate monitor. I'm not sure what the heck that thing was. So heart rate monitor's on. Who knows how good it's going to be. And then 512 megs of RAM. And then we've already seen the wireless charger. So, you know, right at, with all this information, this really seems like the one to get right now.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Looking forward to it.
The biggest thing I think for me is what's the battery going to be like?
Yeah, right.
So I enjoy my Wear device at the moment, but it's, I want it to be like a watch. I don't want to have to take it off. It's obviously far easier said than done. that's what I would like.
Which one did you end up with?
I got the LG one.
The G Watch. And so what has your battery performance been just in daily use? Are you having to charge it up before the end of the day?
No. It gets through a day. But I often forget to charge it. And then, then I've got to charge it the next day. So then I'm not wearing it for a bunch. And then I, just forget to put it on for the rest of the day. So it's, it would be a lot easier if I just never had to take it off.
If it was solar powered, in other words.
Or use my heart rate or something.
Right. Hey, that's not a bad idea. Has a heart rate monitor. Might as well put it to use. Wireless charging, obviously, I help that too. Because I can only speak from my own experience with the Samsung Gear Live and the fact that the charger broke the watch. Having a bad charging unit is one of the best ways for me to not use my device ever again, because ever since then it's just I don't want to fiddle with it. I don't want to try.
I put this down on the charging unit and I put it the wrong way and I didn't know and it didn't charge.
Hopefully the wireless charger fixes that with the 360. And then a few other watches will be coming out. First of all, LG might actually unveil the next G Watch, the follow-up, at IFA in Berlin next month. Although this is just kind of unconfirmed rumor of the Korea Times, but I've definitely been hearing a little bit here and there about the successor to the G Watch so quickly. Interesting. So we'll see if that happens. But ASUS did tease via Twitter that they would have an announcement at IFA. The tweeted photo looks like a watch face, and says, and it's not round, it's square, and says, quote, "Time has been transformed and we have changed." So pretty certain they're giving heavy clues there about a watch.
Philosophical.
Yeah, I know. ASUS, don't do that. You're making my brain explode.
Deep.
So more Android Wear to come. We'll see what happens there. Okay. It's time to get to the app segment. Let's talk about a few apps this week. Thought you might care about this one, Gina, because I feel like I've heard these words come out of your mouth when you were rocking the HTC One M8.
Yes, indeed. HTC is bringing its in-house apps to the rest of Android and releasing them in the Play Store. So the first app to be made available to anyone is Zoe, which is the app I think that made me really kind of question whether or not to get the Google Play Edition when I got my HTC One. Leo loves Zoe's, and I was like, oh man, I want that, and I want the relationship for everyone. It's available in the Play Store now. Unfortunately, I have several Android devices. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not compatible with any of them that aren't the HTC One, M7, or M8, both of which are out of commission for me. So I wasn't able to install it. But more device support supposedly is coming, and more apps of HTC's is to follow, with HTC's Creative Labs team hard at work on those releases. So that's pretty cool. I'm glad to see that. I want a phone manufacturer to become, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't want this, but I kind of want a phone manufacturer to prove that its software is so good, because you want to install it on any phone, not just the phone that you bought from them. I think that's the way you kind of get feedback and make these apps better, is to release that, do a wide release and not just release on your own phones. And so good for them. And I want to see more of that. And so Zoe's actually pretty good app. I mean, it's kind of a mashup, I guess. Droid Life called it a mashup of Instagram and Vine and filters. It sounds a little bit like it's in the auto awesome.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, it kind of reminds you of auto awesome a little bit. But yeah, it's in the Play Store if you want to try it out.
The only
a relatively new version of Android to run it.
Yeah, the only device that it would even install I was able to install it on was my Nexus 5, and my Nexus 5 has just been weird lately. I think I need to go from the version L preview and go back to 4.4.4 or something, because it's just getting all weird and wacky. But anyways, I tried to play around with Zoe for a little while, and it was just kind of slow and not very solid. I don't know if it was my phone or if it was the app, but
it'll work on some compatibility issues, I bet.
Well, yeah, and if they're opening it up for more devices, then they still have yet to do that because, I mean, and believe me, I have a lot of devices because of this show on my Google Play account, and none of them were compatible except for any previous HTC devices that I've installed in the past or that I've tested in the past, and then the Nexus 5. So,
right.
But yeah, so what does HTC have to gain from opening up an app like Zoe? Like from a business standpoint, HTC as a company isn't doing so hot. We keep, you know, talking about this year after year. They're kind of just not doing so great. So I understand the desire to kind of open it up to try new things. But from a business standpoint, is this just about brand awareness more than anything? Or what do you think, Chris? What do they have to gain from this?
I don't know the answer to that. It's one that I find puzzling. I got the last year's HTC One. I thought it was a great phone overall, and I really liked the Zoe feature. So in that regard, it's exciting to see it come out. But as you mentioned, you know, Google have released their Auto Awesome. I hate that name. since then, which does, you know, largely the same thing. I don't know. I can definitely see a lot of negatives to doing it. This particular sort of feature, if you will, focusing on, you know, making sense of your photos and compiling videos, like you could do a dedicated companies focusing on that and, right, you know, business models that would flow on from that. I'm dubious that HTC would take it that far. In which case it's hard for me to comment on what their motives might be there.
Yeah, it's just interesting. It does require an account. Like, one thing that kind of surprised me about Zoe when I was running it is I wanted to run it and have it create it and then just, like, export it to my phone, just directly onto my phone. But it's almost like it requires you to send the bits into the cloud to their servers, and then it constructs it, and then it presents it for you through their service, which is kind of interesting. Is that how it worked on your device, on your standalone device, Gina?
I didn't have Zoe.
Oh, that's right. No.
HTC Ones, because it was the Google Play edition. So I never had it. And they're both not running right now. But yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, that's a good point. It really could be its own business, but I think it is marketing and branding. And I think maybe part of it is just like becoming a better software company, right? Like getting feedback from more users and, you know, being prepared to be compatible with lots of different phones. I don't know. I tend to think like the wider distribution, the better. Although I can see the argument that it doesn't support the business directly if it's a free app.
Right. Interesting change of events for them though. And I'm curious to run more of their software, test it out. In other app news, and we're all parents on this show, so this is going to be an interesting discussion, I have a feeling. A new app that aims to help parents that can't talk to their kids, apparently. It's called Ignore No More. It was developed by a frustrated mom who would call her kids only to have them not pick up or return her call. She had the idea for the app. She learned how to develop and all this kind of stuff. And I'm sure, you know, I don't know if she worked with somebody or if she took it on entirely by herself. But basically, she created this app that gives her the power to remotely lock and disable functionality of her kids' phones until they register a call back to her. And, you know, and of course, it's in the Play Store, so anybody can get it. I think it's like $5 per phone. So, you know, if it's the parent and one kid, you're going to pay $10 to register it on two phones. Supposedly the app cannot be disabled by the kid. And I, you know, was kind of scanning through the FAQ to kind of read up on this, because I'm like, how is that possible? The FAQ says the minute a child sets the app to airplane mode or turns it off, removes the battery, whatever, obviously the app can do nothing. The second it detects internet or cell tower, it will connect to the phone and then, of course, lock it if that's what it's supposed to do at that point. So the developer claims that there's no way to get around that locked kind of that locked signal that comes from the parent if that signal has been sent and the app is installed. The FAQ also says that a child cannot uninstall the app without the parent's username or password. So they have to actually have that. So once the app is installed on the phone, and you guys are developers, so maybe you can figure that out how this is possible. Once the app is installed on the kid's phone, it can then not be uninstalled without a username and password that passes through Ignore No More and has control over the phone enough to prevent it from being uninstalled. Is that possible? Is it possible for an app that's installed to prevent itself from getting uninstalled?
It doesn't sound possible. I honestly don't know the answer to this question off the top. And I read through the FAQ as well, because I was like, how is it doing this? So it sounds like when the app is installed on the child's phone, you, for the first time, you grant it administrative access.
Okay.
In the settings, which is the thing that lets it lock your phone, right? And so then if the kid goes into administrative access and tries to deny it administrative access, it pings the parent phone and says, hey, your kid is messing with the settings. And if the parent, this is what the FAQ says, if the parent wants to uninstall the app from the child's phone, they have to actually open the app, enter in their password, and then the app lets you, remove the administrative access. It is hard for me to believe that the system doesn't let a user deny administrative access. Like, I don't see how the child couldn't just, remove the setting, but I don't know. Chris has more of an insight on this.
I've only looked in this area a little bit, but there's the device administrator section. I think it sounds possible. There's, a bunch of permissions that you can request there. I use it in Action Launcher solely for turning off the screen when you tap the screen. But I think it sounds possible.
Yeah, I'm just
crazy.
Or if you factory reset the phone, although, then the prime directive of the prime directive of the app is have my kid call me. And if not, it deactivates the phone entirely. And all you can do with that phone is call a parent, essentially.
Or call 911.
Or call 911. Yes. Good point.
Emergency contacts.
Yeah, in case of emergency. So if the kid is getting around it, then that prime directive is not being met. And the next time the parent sees the kid, that phone's probably being taken away. And some people in the chat room are like, if you're using this phone, you have problems. That's not my judgment to make because, hey, every parental decision and situation is very, very different. So I suppose you never know. I hope to never not have to use an app like this. I don't ever want to use an app like this.
Yeah, we don't have teenagers yet, Jason.
I know. So it's a world I just don't understand, even though I feel like I should be able to understand. I am a parent, but not a parent of teenagers.
I sort of love the story about this developer. This woman, she's a mom, but she's also like an Iraq vet, and she's climbed, Mount Kilimanjaro, and she just decided, her kid didn't call her back, and she had never made an app before. But she was like, I should have an app. And she started reading up on being an app developer and made this app just kind of, on her own steam, just educating herself. And that just made me laugh. Like, I thought that was hilarious because, how many people say, oh, there ought to be an app for this.
Right.
And then how do I learn how to code apps? And then, then nothing happens.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome that she built the app and got local news coverage. And we're talking about it here.
And they talked to her kid. Who of course had this app installed on the phone and he's like, yeah, I think it's a great idea for other people. I think it's a great idea. I didn't think it was a great idea for me, but it makes sense for other people. It's like, of course.
That was a pretty great news segment.
Lou in the chat room has some information as far as this is concerned. He's saying when you install an app that allows this kind of control, it warns you that the remote administrator can delete the phone. So that's kind of what you were talking about, Chris. There are a number of tools to use to prevent people from doing it. But I don't think they can prevent an EEPROM reload. So there you go. So there are probably ways around this, but the kid's probably not going to get too far with that, though, because still got to go home with that phone. Then what? So there you go. But in general, let's try not to lock our kids' phones. And kids, listen to your parents. There we go. I don't know. There we go. Real quick email here. We have an email from, let's see here, Ankit Balyan, who says, my Nexus 5 has gotten a little slow recently, and I was looking to do a factory reset for some time. With that in mind, I finally found the time and the energy to back up my stuff and go for the all clear this week. However, when I did start the process, to my horror, The screen was just stuck at the erasing screen and refused to move on. Normally in my previous phone, Samsung Galaxy S2, it usually took less than 30 seconds. When I went online, I found that many other people had also experienced this issue while resetting their Nexus devices. Just wanted to write in and get the word out to the AAA audience. If they are doing this, then patience is the key. Mine took almost 1 hour and 30 minutes to erase, but it did complete. On the forums, I read that for some, it even took more than 2 hours. So if you're also stuck, please be patient and indulge your mind in some other activity. Otherwise, you may feel the need to interfere and risk damaging the phone further. I've experienced this. And yeah, strangely, I have experienced it on a Nexus, on wiping a Nexus, and it suddenly took forever to do it. And I don't know why. I don't think the phone was encrypted necessarily. So, you know, that could be one reason. If your device is encrypted and it's doing like a, you know, an encrypted wipe of the device, that might take longer. But I'm not entirely sure why. But it's a good note to folks that when you do something like a factory reset on your phone, it's, and particularly if you do it and then you decide to stare at your device and wait for it to be done, which a lot of people do, myself included, sometimes it will surprise you at how long it takes. And you might think that you're smarter than the process. Don't interfere, because if you do, sometimes you can create more problems than it's worth. So there you go.
Cyanogen mom. Yes.
Cyanogen mom. Exactly. Just needs to put a tweet out on Twitter.
The computer is smarter than you.
Listen to the computer now. Okay.
Listen to the computer now.
There we go. So good advice. Thank you for writing in, Ankit. I really appreciate it. Anybody can send an email to us. We are AAA@twit.tv. Always love getting your feedback. All right. Without further ado, it's time to step into the arena. Let's go to the Android arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android arena.
All right. From last week, I did not see this coming. Wow. Disk usage wins at 47%. So a legitimate breaking of Ron's run. So there we go. Yes. He can't contest this one.
No, he cannot. Although, for you. Yeah, disk usage.
Yes. This is a team win right here. This is us against Ron, this win. I accept this for all of us.
When Ron loses, we all win.
Yes, exactly. Poor Ron. He's not even here to defend himself.
Poor guy.
But he knows. He understands. Disk usage, 47% of the votes. Line, Disney Sumsum, which was Ron's game and did mount a nice early lead, I believe, at one point. It's at 28%. Sketchbook Mobile Express, 13%. And The Guardian at 13%. And based on the chat room, Wade County comes through with the current stats through week 32. I'm at 7. Ron's at 12. Gina, you're at 8. Guests at 5. So right now, that means that the pressure is on you, Chris, to win one for your fellow guests. No pressure. But so let's see here. So Gina, I suppose that means that you are first, and I will I've installed your app so I can show it off while you talk about it.
Cool. All right. So my app pick this week is called Super Better. It is free right now, although I saw the creator say that it's free for now on Android. So you might want to get it now because it sounds like it might not be free forever. Super Better has been out on iOS for a while, and it's by Jay McGonigal, who's a game developer who did that famous TED Talk about how games can make the world a better place and they're not a waste of your time and you can make yourself a better person through playing games. I really love that idea, and that's what the app Super Better really kind of tries to do. It's like, it's a self-improvement app, but sort of couched as a game. In it, you're a hero who goes on quests and gets power-ups and fights bad guys and like amasses allies, and but doing sort of real-world things that are good for you, like taking a walk around the block or drinking a glass of water or sitting up, you know, standing up from your chair, or, you know, psychological things like defeating the self-critic who's like one of the bad guys. And I really like this app a lot because it's really kind of fun. So when you install it, you start out just kind of like, it kind of walks you through the beginning of like your first quest and what that would look like. And the first quest is just to kind of tap your way through tap your way kind of like through the app and figure out what the power-ups and quests and bad guys are. And then you can choose the ones that you want to do. Like, so today, one of the things that I did, I'm looking at my activity pad. So I decided to chug a glass of water as a power-up, which I did. And so I drank a little extra water today. Not a big deal. But it's kind of fun because the app kind of treats it like it's this huge achievement and I got plus one, you know, emotional and health points. And so every day the app kind of reminds you to take on a new challenge or fight a new bad guy. And the app is really fun. Like, the copy is written really well. So in my bad guys list, I've got the sticky chair, which is the and its cousin, the sticky couch, which cons us into sitting down and being sedentary all day, and liquid calories for fiberless beverages and make us gain weight, you know, sodas and that kind of thing. The lazy exercise robbers, like elevators and escalators that keep you from getting exercise. So it's kind of fun, well-written little delightful ways to sort of make yourself better or do something better each day. And apparently there's actual science and research
behind
all of these. Apparently there is quite a bit of science. And you can see, you can tap on any power-up or bad guy and tap on the little science icon, which explains the reason why you're chugging a glass of water or hugging yourself. And I'll admit, some of these are a little cheesy. The hugging yourself, I was like, but you know, all right, you gotta take what you can. But, you know, eating when you're hungry and stopping when you're full, that kind of thing, or just sending an SMS or an email or calling someone that you love. It's a fun little sort of self-improvement game. There you go. With lots of positive feedback, with sounds and art. And it's kind of like you're this hero going through life, making yourself better and making the world better. And it's, you know, it's cute and silly, but I like that it's got this game mechanics really kind of built into it, framed that way versus just a straight up kind of goals app or to-do app. So yeah, that's it. Super better.
Kind of reminds me of Habit RPG, which we had on the show in previous. Yes. And then at some point we had Habit Bowl. This is like a category. I could totally do this category in Android App Arena. I might just do that.
You could, and you should.
That's awesome, though. Using your device, gamifying the things that you don't enjoy doing, right? At least giving yourself a little pat on the back for those times when you drink that glass of water, which I need to do a lot more of. So there you go. I understand. I get it. That's cool. I like it. So that is Super Better, and it's free for right now. So there you go. Free for now. Go to the Play Store and check it out for yourself. All right. Now, Chris, I have a good feeling you might be a little familiar with your app. Maybe the app that you're going to show off. I don't know. I'm just a guest. I have it installed. I can show it off while you talk about it.
Yeah. So, I feel a little self-promoting, doing my own app, but I didn't have time for anything else this morning, I'm afraid. But so last week I released TapPath. It's just a very small little app, certainly not on the scale of Action Launcher or Link Bubble. But it's very simple. You install it and you set it as your default browser, and then when you click a link in Twitter or Facebook, Google Plus, or whatever, then you, by default, that link will then go on to your fallback browser. So in my case, that's Link Bubble, obviously, but it can also be Chrome or whatever. And you can configure what happens. But with TapPath, it allows you to use the double and triple tap actions, which are handy on PC and that sort of stuff. And so it means, in my case, when I'm, browsing Twitter, if I come across a link that I know, I want to open in Chrome for some reason, maybe it's a Google Doc or whatever, I just double-click the link and it sends it straight to Chrome. Or you can also do triple tap, which in my case does push bullet. But you can configure it even simpler than that. You can just make it, even if you don't use Link Bubble, you can do a single tap, will take you to Chrome as you're used to, and a double tap will add that link to Pocket, and that's it. So it's very simple. and very small, but hopefully works reasonably well. And yeah, just a little hack that allows you to get a little bit more efficient throughout the day. So yeah, that's TapPass in a nutshell.
Cool. And yeah, at first blush, it seems like a companion to Link Bubble, which it works really well with Link Bubble, but it also works even if you don't have Link Bubble installed. It's really a way to control your clicks.
I had a few people say, oh, well, this should have been a part of Link Bubble. And I definitely considered that. But the reason I released it separately, the main one was, there were two main ones. One is... there are a bunch of people that, for whatever reason, don't actually use Link Bubble or don't want to, and you know that's fine, that's their choice. But this way, they can still use the added power of Double and Triple Tap by releasing it as a standalone app. And I was also of the mind that if I didn't do it as a standalone app, someone else would, so I might as well do that.
Yeah, it makes sense to have it a standalone thing because you know then it puts that power into anyone's hand as far as like how they interpret a single, double, or triple click. I have my triple click set to Pocket, by the way.
Pocket, yeah.
So, there you go. But yeah, so that is TapPath. It's 99 cents, and it's in the Play Store. Very good app. I like it a lot. Mine is on the other end of the pay scale, so it's a little more expensive. It's $5.99, but it's pretty kooky. It's called Surgeon Simulator. Have you guys heard of this one?
No.
And you might be afraid for what you're about to see, but it is exactly what it sounds like. So Surgeon Simulator is a very unique take on being a surgeon, right? And it does not take itself seriously at all. As you can see, you can take all these items and throw them all around and everything like that. I'll go ahead and take this cassette, and let's see here. I'll go ahead and place it in there. There we go, and hit play. It's going to take me to a special world. There's a little Easter egg here. So what is Surgeon Simulator? Essentially, you use one or two fingers to grab your tools and perform open heart surgery on someone. And like I said, it doesn't take itself. Oh, I didn't get the code. Oh, no, this is the wrong one way to go. Here, let me go back because I can't show it off with this. Now restart. Anyways, man, I totally went into the bonus level and forgot the code. That's awesome.
It happens. It's okay.
I don't know. Anyways, it's super kind of just rough as far as how it attacks this here. Let's see here. I need to get, there we go. This is what I need to do. Okay, heart transplant. So you have all these different missions, right? You can go for the lungs, you can go for the heart, whatever. And you're presented all of these tools on the side of your station. And I'm not going to show off too much of it because honestly, it's kind of a gory game. But it can be kind of fun. You can throw your cups at people. And yeah, I'll just put that there. And you can check your tools. Maybe I'll pick up the hammer. So, okay, maybe I'll show off a little bit. So one finger walks your tools across in a very haphazard way. And I'm pretty sure this is by design. Like, it's not meant to be precise in any way, right? Like, oops, I'm the world's worst, like, surgeon. And that's kind of what it's all about. This game is all about being the worst surgeon in the world. And the more you dive in, the more you can... you know, extract the heart, and eventually, even though I'm horrible at this game, sorry, let me move that tool. Oh, man. This is gushing blood. See, I can pull the organs and try and pull them out of there.
Ooh.
So I'll go ahead and throw that over there, sure. Yeah, whatever. So you try and, you can see the blood level up here is going down. You don't want that to go down too fast for obvious reasons. You want to perform the function, which in this case is to remove the heart with minimal damage and, you know, keep that heart rate at 82 beats per minute, which is what it's at right now. And, you know, it's gross. You have to have a certain kind of sense of humor, I think, for a game like this. But I'm just the guy to do it. So there we go. This is Surgeon Simulator, and it's a silly little $5.99 game, but it really, the more you play it, the more you you really want to be serious with it and like, no, I've got to get this heart. And I just don't know if it's necessarily designed that way. Like, it's just all about you being the worst surgeon in the world, and it proves it to you every time you try and be good at it. So there you go. Surgeon Simulator, $5.99. Check it out if you dare. Okay.
I'm going to
turn that down.
The operative phrase.
Oh, man. Even I wouldn't go there, Gina. Yeah, that could have gotten a lot gorier, by the way. That was tame. That was tame compared to what it actually does. So take from that what you will. AAAPoll.com/175 to vote for your favorite app or game this week. Is it Super Better, Tap Path, or Surgeon Simulator? Go there, check it out, and place your vote. Let us know. We'll talk about it on next week's show and see what we got. Early reports are in, and Tap Path, Surgeon Simulator are tied for first right now with only 10 votes in total. So we'll see where this lands. Cool stuff. Great show, you guys. Chris Lacey, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Hopefully we can bring you back again when you don't mind, you know, delaying your lunch for All About Android, if that's cool.
No. It's perfect. Lunchtime's now, so worked out really well.
Excellent. Well, Chris, obviously, you know, you talked about Tap Path in the arena, but this is kind of the time where we ask our guests to, you know, point people wherever you like. Where can people find what you do online, your social media, whatever you want people to know? This is up to you.
I don't have too much to plug up. Well, I'm currently finishing off LinkBubble 1.4. I'm bringing it to adding material design to it. So that's I've been messing with that in the last few days, and it's going pretty well. So hopefully I'll release that tomorrow. But I'm pretty excited about that update. It's one of those ones where it feels like a good step forward, embracing, you know, shadow and color and that sort of stuff. So definitely keep an eye out for that, which should land tomorrow.
Awesome. Excellent. Great. And your bit.ly/ChrisLaceyApps. People can follow all of your work for all of your apps there. Is that right?
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Cool.
That'll take you straight to the Play Store.
Right on. Excellent. Chris, really appreciate it. We'll have you back again soon. Thank you so much, sir.
Not a worry at all. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And Gina, what you got going?
When I'm not here on Twit, I'm working on ThinkUp. It's thinkup.com. That's my company and my product. It's a web, it's basically analytics for your social media accounts, your Twitter and your Facebook account. And we got a 14-day free trial. So if you use Twitter or Facebook, sign in, give it a try. Let me know what you think. It's thinkup.com. And also, when I'm not doing All About Android or working on ThinkUp, I co-host This Week in Google here on the Twit Network, and that airs on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. I'll be on tomorrow with Leo and Jeff talking Google and the cloud and maybe even a little bit of Android, so stop on by.
Usually a little bit of Android sneaks in there from time to time. So
A little bit.
Check it out. And Zach, was this your first full, like, switched show or for Twit? In studio? Okay. This is a big moment for you, sir. You did fantastic. Really appreciate you stepping in for Brian. Normally, we give Brian a lot of flack, but I will save you from that today.
Yeah, we won't haze. We won't haze you, Zach. Thank you, Zach.
He says thank you. And you can find me at about.me/JasonHowell. You can follow my music, yellowgoldmusic.com. You can also check out my other Android app show here on the Twit Network. It's Android App Arena at twit.tv/arena. I hope you'll check it out. I'm having a lot of fun with that show. But that is it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. Once again, you can leave us a voicemail at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send the show an email. We are AAA@twit.tv. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Android Show. We're on Google Plus. There's a community there. Just search for it. We're on Reddit. It's twitaaa.reddit.com. That helps inform the topics on the show. I definitely check that every week to see what you guys are jazzed about. Show notes and past episodes can be found at twit.tv/AAA. That's the show page, so you can find all of our videos there, as well as YouTube, iTunes, and all that. And finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.